us for the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
So, Mr. Chair, looks like we have some accounts payable here. I would move we approve the accounts payable. It would be cycle date 429 through 53 in the amount of $492,773.74. Also approving the payroll checks. That would be the amount of $506,804.27. And also the state and IRS income tax, payroll taxes associated with that, $207,308.99. So total warrants approved in all would be $1,206,887, noting that the county manager has reviewed and approved such.
Second. Items of note. Tom?
I do. First, to bring your attention, we have a payment to Aviation Services Supply Company. And believe it or not, that wasn't the airport. It's put in the plant budget, and this is shelving for the container that's been purchased for storage for evidence at the sheriff's office.
Aviation, huh?
Aviation Services Supply Company, right. $2,424, and that was a used storage unit or truck trailer, actually, for a shipping container. Payment to Challenge Technologies, Inc. This is from the IT pool and also the comm pool. This is the UPS unit for the CLEF Comm Center project, $42,732. Payment to Ducco's Construction, Inc. This is Road and Bridge and the Infrastructure Pool budget. And this is for the Butler Creek Construction. And this is to the period ending January 15, 2019. $51,831.44. Payment to Denver Industrial Sales and Services. This was a road and bridge. And this was equipment for a trailer-mounted crack seal melting pot, $3,600. Payments to Hayden School District and also the South Route School District. This is from the Human Services budget, and this is the CMP Collaborative Management Funds from the state. So those distributions, $12,500 each. Payment to Motorola Solutions. This is from the Communications Pool, purchase of 3 APX consoles and radio communication equipment. This is for the CLEP project, $23,026.06. Payment to Hanna Mechanical. This is a YVRA for the replacement AC units for the passenger terminal, $8,429.34. Payment to Tuck Communication Services. This is facilities management. And this is for the Mitel Telecom Services. This is for 2 years of prepaid support through June 30, 2022, $11,060. Payment to CDW LLC. This is from the IT pool, and this is controllable replacement purchase of 26 monitors that will go against it with 26 laptops, $3,718. Finally, payment to Tetra Tech, Inc. This is emergency management, and this is payment of 43.5% completion of the Rouse County Hazard Mitigation Plan, and that's an update. Payment $12,812.73.
Any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Yesterday, we received updates from our county manager, from our county attorney. We had a work session with the commissioners and updates from our human services director, our emergency operations director, and our communications manager, and from the sheriff.
So I'm good with all that. So I got consent agenda here, Mr. Chair. I move that we approve consent agenda items A, B, and C, and noting that agenda item C, the resolution will be 2019, or P, or P-015.
Second.
About that.
And I would just note that Chairman Melton is not here. She'll be back later to sign the stuff.
Put it in her box.
I seconded that motion, did I not?
Yep.
Any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
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 Thank you. Go ahead.
Okay, we're going back on, and we're here for our 10:55 a.m. item, a special events liquor license for the Hayden Heritage Center. Barb, what have you got for us?
We have a special event to be held on May 1st from 8 to 5 at the Hayden Greenery in Hayden. They already got a liquor license through the count or the town there. And
so it's the same event. It's the
dividing sort of line.
Dividing line. And
yeah, why do they need liquor license from both this town?
Because the area that the event is going to be on and that the liquor license will encumber is both in the town and in the county.
But they're only just serving the alcohol in the town, right, at the granary?
We still have to have the liquor license for us. Well, the granary, part of the granary is in the county.
Oh, okay.
Part of the granary is in the town.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah, no, it's a convoluted line there. That
town ought to do some annexing.
Well, I don't think they probably. Why would you want to annex into the town and pay the extra taxes?
That's true.
Property taxes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So
you wouldn't have to get two liquor licenses every time.
Yeah, exactly.
That would be the reason.
I said just put up a line or something.
Yeah, don't let them go into that part
no
of the
alcohol past those points.
Don't go part of that part of the grain.
Because it is kind of unfortunate. I mean, you know, a nonprofit having to pay two.
Twice.
I mean, I don't know what the town charges.
It is what it is. Yeah. So Commissioner Melton will be back here at 1
I'm just
going to
vote that you approve that you sign it.
All right.
Yeah, whatever
you can write in
do,
chair pro tip.
Okay.
So, Mr. Chair, I move that we approve and authorize your signature on a special event liquor license for the Hayden Heritage Center Incorporated for an event to be held at the Hayden Granary at 198 East Lincoln Avenue, Hayden, Colorado, 81639, for an event to be held on 5/18/19, and authorize the Chair Pro Tem sign signature on that.
Second. Is there any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, Ken. Come on up, Kelly.
So, Kelly reached out to me.
Hold on. Let's get you. We want to make sure that you get your voice on the recording here.
Yeah,
have a seat with us.
Introduce myself, too. I'm Doug.
Doug Ken Davis.
Ken, nice to meet you.
Ken, yeah.
So we're here for our we're here for our 11 o'clock item. By the way, Commissioner Melton is at a speaking engagement for young women this morning. So
okay.
I'm the chairman pro tem, and she regrets not being here today. But
I've talked to her.
Prior commitment, that's great. So in any case, we're here for a discussion about the health partnership and specifically about its role in the medically aided treatment program.
Sure.
So you can introduce yourself.
My name is Ken Davis, the executive director of the health partnership. In full disclosure, I'm actually transitioning back to doing clinical care, and I've got somebody else at my agency who will be assuming the executive director role as of June 1st, but she's going to do a great job.
If you don't mind me asking, who is that?
It would be Stephanie Monahan.
Stephanie, okay,
yep.
Great.
Stephanie Monahan will continue leading the agency. So.
So, yeah, just be, you're okay.
So
great.
We can either talk about the health partnership briefly and then talk about Senate Bill 1774. It's.
Yeah, I would like to have the conversation about the health partnership first.
Okay.
And just a little bit of what you guys do and who you are and, you know, and,
perfect.
And how come the Brough County Board of Health doesn't know of your existence?
know that they exist.
Yeah, after the MIT. Right.
Well, I think we've known that they've existed all along. It's just been unclear what each one of these nonprofit agencies do and how they interconnect.
Okay.
How they support our services and how we support their services.
So,
but let's also let the record show that Kelly Keith, our director of human services, is here with us today.
And I should just, Kelly Keith is also on the board of the Health Partnership, so she knows. Sorry.
Hopefully it's not.
We're good.
Not a clinical emergency.
Well, it could be. Who knows? all right. So the Health Partnership started in 2006, you guys, under the umbrella of Northwest Cholera Health, formerly VNA. And the main driver at that time was, how are we going to share health information? That was really the premise for why the Health Alliance was formed. They went along to do a lot of other things under the umbrella of the Health Partnership, but
who's they? The Health Partnership.
So the Health Partnership is a coalition that gives hospitals, so Middle Park Medical Center, YVMC, Memorial Health, Meeker, some of the clinical practices here in town. They all kind of came together because there was interest in figuring out how do we get health information shared across our vast region here in Northwestern Colorado. Roughly two-thirds of our population here goes to the front range when they want higher level of services, and the middle population has the Grand Junction. So there was just tons of conversations around that. Well, at that time, we also had a lot of uninsured people. So around that same, in the evolution of things, the Health Alliance helped kind of facilitate the opening up of the Federally Qualified Health Center that happened here in Steamboat Springs. I don't know if they were involved in the one in Craig. They may have been, but that was some of the things they've done. They've come up with called a Community Assistance Program card, where if you go to one place and they say that these are the financial resources I have, I take this card and I'll go to this clinic and I'll get care. If I go here, I get this level of care. Like it created a single place where somebody could go and kind of financially qualify for services. And that card was agreed upon by our regional partners to be accepted and would serve as a pseudo way of a sliding scale type of health services.
Ken, we're trying something new here, which is, would you like to be able to like go through and do your entire presentation and then have us ask you questions, or would you like us to interrupt as things?
Well, let's have a.
I think it might be helpful in this particular case to interrupt because I think you're going to raise a lot of questions as we go forward. So I'm going to I'm going to start off with this health. I'm going to guess that most of your clients are. Relying upon Medicaid?
I would say most of the people we serve in care coordination are Medicaid clients.
Okay.
Yes, but they don't have to be. That's just pretty unique in our region.
And then the other quick question I had, I assume that you're addressing both mental and physical health?
Yes. Okay. We help. So we don't provide direct services, you guys. We provide community-based care coordination service. That means to say somebody who is struggling navigating the different referrals that they might be needing for their medical issues or mental health issues, we're here to help that person identify like what are the things they want to address, how do we help them go about achieving the things that they want to achieve. And that might be giving them numbers, that might be helping them make referrals, it might be helping them get transportation, it might be helping them get into housing. It's kind of whatever they identify as priorities for themselves. We get referred clients who tend to be complex clients who clinics otherwise are struggling to help. Oftentimes our clients have mental health issues. About 80% of the people who are in care coordination with our care coordinators have mental health issues, and a significant amount of them have substance use disorder.
Without money or insurance.
Oftentimes without money or insurance, exactly. So under the umbrella of Northwest Colorado Health, we kind of got enrolled in, we wrote a grant, and we kind of took on the role of helping people get on health insurance. So for the last 6 years, the health partnership has been receiving funds from Connect for Health, maybe the Colorado Health Foundation. We, in turn, then are hiring people across the region to help people get enrolled on health insurance. So we've helped...
You were filling the role of the navigators?
We help people what's called health coverage guides. We were the entity by which the funds were funneled through in order to be distributed to the different entities across the region. Again, just to point out, we serve 5 counties here in Northwestern Colorado. We're not just Route... We're based out of Route because it's central, but we serve Grand, Jackson, Route, Rio Blanco, and Moffitt counties.
Is that the same as Northwest Colorado Health?
No.
They only do 3 counties. Northwest Colorado Health doesn't serve Rio Blanco per se, although...
Okay. They're down there every once in a while, but no, I don't think they have a contract.
Yeah, we don't.
Okay.
Nothing. I mean, we serve clients. I mean, when I'm seeing clients in Craig, I see people from Rio Blanco. They come to us, but we don't. Yeah, there's no contractual thing going on that I'm aware of. So anyway, other things that have come along under the umbrella of the Northwest Colorado Health is, well, let me see how I... So, 2015, conversations were had that, hey, the health partnership should become its own entity. Get out from underneath the umbrella of Northwest Colorado Health, formerly BNA.
And that was mostly because Northwest Colorado Health was its own entity, and your partnership was bringing in the hospitals and the other providers as well.
What, the reason that was done was that as a program under Northwest Colorado Health BNA, the feeling was is that the health partnership wasn't able to leverage some of the collaborative relationships that it needed to as effectively as it could be as a standalone entity, and it also it also allowed the opportunity for a director person to be hired that could actually take the health partnership and create a stronger foundation underneath it than what it was existing under as just a program of the VNA. And honestly, our main payer is Rocky Mountain Healthlands as a funding source into the program was Rocky Mountain Healthlands, and they were very supportive of the health partnership becoming its own entity as
so
well.
So how do they pay? Do they pay like a percentage on insurance policies, or as in like an insurance broker, or are they just a contribution fee?
So Rocky Mountain Health Plans is the regional accountable entity at this point in time. But in the past, they were called the RECO, the Regional Accountable Care Organization. So that was the managed Medicaid, right? It's how does the state manage the Medicaid population?
Right.
Again, we're very unique in that they are willing to give us money to help with the care coordination of clients, but they don't require us to only serve Medicaid clients. I could take care of somebody with insurance. I could take care of somebody without insurance. But they basically are investing in our agency to take care of not only Medicaid clients, but anybody else who might need care coordination services. They don't limit that. Now, if I wasn't a community-based care coordination model, because I ran one down in Glenwood Springs where we were a clinically based care coordination model, we were only limited to taking care of the Medicaid population. We did not have the flexibility to take care of people with insurance.
And that was part of the 501c3?
No, had. That was just because of how the clinic was set up and how the funds were flowing into the... That was the contractual agreement was how that was set up. But because we were a community-based entity serving the community, they did not place that requirement on us for the clients we served, that we were allowed to take care of all residents in the Northwestern Colorado. Now, so let's say the money comes to us here in Ralph County. We do. We hire our own care coordinators for Ralph County, but we contract with an agency in Grand County to do the care coordination in Grand and Jackson County. We contract with agencies in Moffitt County to care coordination over there. We contract with agencies in Rio Blanco to do the care coordination there in both Meeker and Rangeley. So we bring in money, and then we, you know, depending on what the program is, we're distributing those funds back in.
Do you have a contract with each of those
you guys have a contract with each of those agencies that are distributing those monies.
Exactly, a subcontract. And we have that for care coordination. We have that for outreach enrollment for insurance purposes. And we also have taken on a role around food insecurity in the region. So we have funds coming into our agency for food insecurity that we subcontract out across the five counties as well for doing work around food insecurity. And right now it's for SNAP outreach enrollment, and we have a grant that's actually doing some more planning around food insecurity. But ultimately, we'll be getting an implementation fund grant from the Colorado Health Foundation, where, again, we'll be working with our partners in every county trying to do this work.
So that would be the three things that you just described. That's, in essence, what the health partnership does.
So if we want to see what I have up here, guys, is literally this is the four strategic pillars of the health partnership. We want to have organizational help, we have employee engagement, we want to strengthen our partner relationships, and we certainly want to make sure the individual experience is as best as it can. We're roughly a $1.8 million budget, and we raised $305,000 so far year to date. We have roughly $150,000 in funding requests out there. The different initiatives that we have that need attention are the ones in pink, and I don't know why that's green because I had that pink earlier today. But of our $1.8 million budget, close to $500,000 is distributed back to our community partners.
Do you charge fees to individual clients?
To
people that you're assisting, or is it all free services?
Yeah,
anybody that comes through the door.
There's no fees to the individuals.
Okay.
And so you asked the question, like, how does Rocky Mountain Health Plan fund this? Essentially, the way they're doing it is they look at how many Medicaid lives they have in the region, and they say, well, I can put in $10 per member per month to help care coordination services in this county. And that's what they do by county.
Which probably saves them money in the
long
run.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Because who we targeting, Doug, are guys or gals or people who are medically complex typically and are using high-cost services. Oftentimes they're using the emergency room. So people are referred to us. We help connect with them and say, okay, what are some of the reasons driving you to use ER? It might be a medical condition that's out of control. It might be a mental health issue that's out of control. It might be loneliness. You know, lots of different reasons could be driving somebody to use these high-cost services. So we get in there and we try to figure out with them, like, how can we better utilize the services and not use ER so much? It just doesn't make sense. Let me go to the next. Why isn't this worrying for me? So that's strategic. When you think about what is it we do, I think I put it in three buckets. One is access. The other one's education. And the other one's wellness. So the thing about access, our care coordination is all about access. How do we help people get connected to the resources they need? Access, another thing we'd say is health insurance enrollment, right? Getting people into insurance so that they can afford health care. So that's another access thing. SNAP. We have a program right now that we run across the region to help people get supplemental nutrition assistance. Again, that's an access program.
So how does that work? I mean, interrupt you there for a second. Mm-hmm. So, our HS, the Human Services Department takes care of that. So
exactly.
You are an intermediary then, that assisting the clients and making sure they can get through the paperwork part of it?
So the federal government had a grant opportunity to the state. The state contracted with Hunger Free Colorado.
Uh-huh.
Hunger Free Colorado contracted with us. And we're working with our regional partners to create a learning community, a collaborative community on how we best do SNAP outreach and enrollment. And Kelly has agreed to be our partner in that program, but initially LiftUp was the one who thought that they would be able to be our partner, and in the end they said they couldn't do that. We reached out to the hospital. We thought the hospital might be. I mean, we're giving Kelly some resources to help increase her outreach for SNAP outreach enrollment, where she can go to route
South Road. So we receive about $15,000 as a sub-grantee. Because Ken said we tried the other agencies and it wouldn't work out, and to help make sure it stayed. So we give most of the money to LiftUp, and it pays for our satellite offices.
Yeah.
And then Ken hired a part-time person, they're full-time but part-time with Hunger Free, that can do the outreach to enroll more people in SNAP. Because you're right, we're the only people that can process applications, but we can't use any of our allocations to do outreach work. So no one can bill their time to outreach work. It's not allowed. You can only be using your time to do the SNAP
process.
Applications. So the person that he hired can do the outreach to go to farmers markets to let people know that you should apply for a SNAP.
Huh.
Yeah. And there's also, as far as I can tell, Peak Pro Plus?
We don't do that here.
We don't do Peak Pro?
No, because that Peak Pro is... It would be another system besides putting it directly into our database. So it would just be an extra barrier step to the person.
So we're not doing that here in this county?
No.
Okay. Well, Hunger Free Colorado is trying to help promote that. So access. I would put the work that I've done around getting Senate Bill 1774, being a voice and an advocate for that. I wasn't lobbying. I was an advocate for that happening. I made relationships with the Attorney General's office and Jose Escobel, who was the one pushing that bill. He wanted to have a county that he could rely on as somebody who could actually implement this program if it got passed as a Senate bill. Bringing resources to our region to treat people with opioid use disorder. So that's where that came from.
That's interesting what you're saying. So Brown County was not necessarily chosen because of statistically it had that high of a rate of opioid abuse?
We were in the top 10 percentile of the state, but let's be clear, there's a lot of counties that don't report out that information. And so... But we had pretty high. In 2016, we had really high rates of opioid-related overdose deaths.
Okay.
Since then, with the work that we've done as kind of the lead agency in a region to do this work, we've been able to reduce that significantly from 19 deaths to, I think, one in 2018. We've had a 95% reduction in opioid-related overdose deaths in 2 years. Now, that's reported to me by the coroner here in Robb County. Now, are other people maybe dying that aren't being identified? Yes. Roughly a third of the people who die, coroners would say, yeah, we don't really know what was the cause of death. So that's kind of a loosey-goosey number in a sense. But what has been reported to me was a pretty significant reduction over 2 years in our comprehensive community clinical approach to address the opioid use disorder, of which getting additional resources here so another thing we think about for access, we do work with what's called the Accountable Health Communities Model. It's a program that was awarded to Rocky Mountain Health Plans through the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Innovation. It's a 5-year program to help incentivize regions to do screenings for social determinants of health in clinical practices, so ERs, primary care practices, mental health facilities. That is a 22-county grant. We represent 5 counties here in Northwestern Colorado. We're the regional lead for the HCM work. Our board serves as the advisory board for the HCM work, which is how the food insecurity as a social determinant of health was chosen. We had to pick up one of the identified needs from a social determinant, and the HCM regional board said, let's address food insecurity, so that kind of put us on this path to go after grant funding and to start looking at how can we better address food insecurity in the region. Mental health first aid. Again, we help lead education around mental first aid. And again, I look at that as an access. It could also be seen as an education thing. But essentially, we're giving people the basics understanding of mental health issues so they can help people or help themselves get referred into treatment.
Ken, before I forget, could you forward this PowerPoint to us?
Sure.
That'd be great, especially for Commissioner Melton's benefit.
Yeah. Another thing we do, we call them navigation networks. It's very much associated with the accountable health communities work as well as the care coordination. But essentially, we know we do care coordination, but there's a lot of other people. Lift Up does care coordination. We have, I think you guys do some care coordination. All the clinics or hospitals have care. So we create this opportunity for boots on the ground people to come together once a month. And sometimes they might actually be discussing a client and saying, you know, who's got the lead on this client so that we're not duplicating services. It's an opportunity for those people to come together and say, these are some additional trainings that we'd like to have. So then the health partnership then figures out, like, how can we bring these additional trainings to the care coordinators in the region? But it's set up. It's a place for people to be sharing, like, different programs that are being done. Oh, you started this program? Oh. And then they start being able to know, I can refer to that agency for that particular program. So it's a once-a-month meeting for boots on the ground, people doing care coordination to come together and learn from each other. And again, it's more of a learning collaborative environment. When you think about education, we've got a lot of stuff going on with education. From not prescribed, we have a AmeriCorps volunteer. Not prescribed is a curriculum as well as a positive youth development. These are curriculums that are being promoted by our AmeriCorps volunteer and the educational assistants here in Brown County. And so that's a pretty important thing. We do continue medical education opportunities. We've done that with some of the providers. We've done that largely we've been involved in the Yampa Valley Wellness Conference last year. So there's things that we're doing in the community for medical education. We provide naloxone training. Naloxone, again, is a reversal agent for people who have an opioid overdose. So we have the capability to provide naloxone training. We just got a grant from the OVH to do law enforcement integrated education, which is naloxone training. It's what are the community resources to address opioid use disorder? So we're going to be working with our law enforcement and first responder partners and making sure that they understand what the community resources are. And anybody who hasn't had naloxone training gets naloxone training, and we're going to provide them with some additional naloxone. Around food insecurity, we're going to be kicking off Cooking Matters is a program that we're going to be kicking off in our region. And then other events, we talk at the community months. If you guys have been around here enough, you may have heard about our Lunch and Learn series. That's been going on for 3 years now, on the tails of a program that I co-founded with Mara Rhodes called the RX Task Force. But we do this three-series Lunch and Learn, where we kind of bring highlights issues around opioid use disorder to the region. And we typically have done that in March or October. Every year we have kind of three Wednesdays in a row that we bring speakers in and we provide some meals and we have a community conversation around different aspects of opioid use disorder. From a wellness standpoint, we got a grant to do a child maltreatment prevention planning, so we've done the planning work, and now we're trying to figure out, like, how do we go about getting the funding for the implementation of that. We applied for a grant across multiple counties, including Route. We didn't get funded, but I think there's still an opportunity for us to go after some funding to do the implementation of our community-based child prevention abuse. Phoenix is a new initiative, again, more along, like, how do we help people in recovery? That is what Phoenix Gym is out of Denver, but we now have the CrossFit Gym here is a Phoenix satellite site. Sarah Coleman is an employee of our health partnership, and she's helping to lead the work on building out the Phoenix community. Essentially, it's weekend workouts for people who are in recovery who have, I don't know if it's 48 hours of sobriety, but people can come and be part of a community. We have a pretty innovative program called Music with Vision. Again, youth focus, 13 to 26. Why do we pick up to 26? Because 26 is an average national age for somebody first entering into residential treatment for opioid addiction. So we're trying to figure out, like, how do we help people in middle school, through high school, and young adult get skills around youth resiliency, around community connection, around how do you better connect with others, have healthier relationships. And it uses music as the hook to get people enrolled in the program, where we learn to play music, you learn to produce music, or you put on musical events. And by doing that, we just open up the space. It's safe, it's sober, kids can talk about their struggles. And roughly 25 kids have been enrolled in that program over the last year and a half. Half of them have been regular users of marijuana. They get into our program, they're no longer regular users of marijuana.
You guys are doing that directly yourself?
That is, yeah, that's a direct program that we offer. It is a community-based recording.
Here in Route?
It's here in Route. It's out of the Riverside Plaza, right next to Skate Church, kind of adjacent to Skate Church. We've got our own recording studio. There is nothing like it in the state of Colorado. There's not another community-based recording studio that I'm aware of that reaches the population that we're serving. We're trying to look at other ways we can use that space, maybe incorporating art, maybe incorporating videography. I mean, we actually just came from a meeting where there was a bunch of brainstorming going on, like what additional services might we be able to provide in this space. We're starting to do work around secondary trauma resilience and self-care. This is primarily the adverse childhood events research, if you guys are familiar with that. It talks about how trauma impacts health outcomes. So we've led conversations in the community around ACEs and trauma-informed care, and we're starting to provide some additional self-care education and secondary trauma education to our community and our community partners. And then lastly, have you guys heard about the Hospital Transformation Project? It's a CMS-driven program that helps hospitals become more engaged and collaborative in community work, specifically to address a lot of issues that are like social drivers of healthcare, and not to mention, like, you know, how do we better reduce ER utilization? How do we better have efficiencies? But a large part of the Hospital Transformation Project is to get hospital partners to be more engaged and collaborative with community partners, and in exchange for that, they get a little bit higher reimbursement for their Medicaid population when they're hospitalized. So we have done a community health needs assessment in collaboration with our health partners across kind of the region, and we're a pretty integral part with our hospital partners in having that community engagement aspect. So when you think of the health partnership, these are the main programs. Now, I've gone to other things that I think are important. I've been a promoter of what's called the Blue Zones Transformation Project. Blue Zones is a community transformation project that helps move our communities in a way that makes the healthier choice the easier choice. There's roughly 47 Blue Zones communities across the nation right now, and I've been trying to build some energy and some interest around becoming a Blue Zones community here. There are no Blue Zones communities in Colorado at this point in time, but it's a pretty expensive venture. It's roughly a $3 to $4 million investment if we want to go all in and become a Blue Zones community. It's a 3-year commitment. Blue Zones is its own thing, and they come here with their proprietary kind of approach to addressing these issues, but it's transforming our communities to make it more walkable. You might say, well, there's enough walking around. Maybe that's true. It helps some of our restaurants produce menus that make it a little bit easier to choose healthier food items. They might go into your grocery stores and position things in a way that makes choosing vegetables and fruit a little bit easier than it is right now. So there are these things that they come into your community, and literally within a 15-mile radius, they look at ways in which they really promote activities and things such that whatever choice you make, that the healthier choice is the easier choice for us to be making. Additionally, I've been a proponent of working collaboratively with the Sustainability Council, with the Economic Development Council. Like this work between what's being done economically in the region, sustainability, and like the health partnership, I think, is this unique integration between community and clinical. Like we're kind of a bridging land, and I would like to see us work a little bit more collaboratively between those areas. And so I've also been promoting, trying to figure out better ways for the health partnership to be involved in use of sustainability and the Economic Development Council. Now, how this all evolves, I don't yet know. As I said, I'm stepping out of it, but Stephanie Monahan will be taking the reins from here and doing additional work. And she's been involved all along in a lot of the things that I've talked about here today.
A lot of irons in the fire.
Yes. Yeah, because when you look at health, we know health doesn't come just from health care that's delivered, right? Health comes from our community. It comes from our services in our community. It comes in the relationships we have. And that's the space where the health partnership, I think, can help be a collaborator, can be a facilitator of conversations. And I'm a very firm believer that, and I know, as a clinician, the care I provide is maybe only 10% of a client's health outcomes. 90% of their health outcomes are coming from things outside of whatever I can provide as a healthcare provider.
So I guess my question here, and especially you hit on it with the cooking matters and the rest,
yeah.
And then when we start talking about discussions about how many entities and how many 501c's, 3's we have in Robb County anyhow to start with, and then how many, and just as us as funders trying to make sure we don't have duplication of services coming from three different agencies and then really not knowing who's supposed to be doing what and how and rest, I mean, even with our extension, that thing there, and then, the confusion with Naloxone training as well, I mean, heck, we sure as hell, us being the Board of Health and the commissioners, would damn sure use some good information about what's going on that whole thing there,
yeah,
too.
Yeah.
I mean, we really don't get any information on that stuff.
Yeah.
When we're sitting here talking about budgets for the first responders and the rest for our sheriff's department, and then coming in with having this discussion a couple years ago about dating on the Naloxone.
Yeah.
And it's just like, really? So we hadn't even, we don't even get numbers on how many we've ever used.
We get numbers on how much we have to buy.
We have.
Well,
we don't know whether we're using it and whether it's just, just having some communication amongst all of these players and you guys and us and everybody so that everybody knows what you're doing, what we're doing, what Kelly's doing, and lift up and the rest, and I don't know.
I was going to, before you address that, I'm going to kind of ask the same question maybe in a different way, which is, and maybe you're in a good position to do so now that you're walking out the door. So Doug kind of expressed that frustration that we have with all these various programs that are delivered through Northwest Colorado Health, and you've been talking about blue zones. I'm thinking about communities that care.
Yep.
We have all these things that are focused on collaboration, cooperation, building of partnerships, and it's like, at what point does that actually translate into increased or better health outcomes for our community? And so my question for you would be, if it was just up to you and you could be in charge of the world, do you see a way to make this entire system work better? And how would you go about doing it?
I have proof. I mean, we've reduced opioid overdose deaths have been reduced 95%. You talk about an improvement in health outcome, you can't place a value on somebody's life that's been saved. So in 2 years, we've done it. I can count on my hand how many other places across the nation can make that claim.
So, but is that a long-term sustainability thing, or is that something that could be blamed on the weather for the day and the rest?
Yeah, so we have kind of a small sample size.
We have a small sample size, but we've had a lot of education with the providers, and I think they're changing a lot of their prescribing patterns. When I look at what is being prescribed, it has dramatically dramatically reduced amount of medicines being prescribed that potentially are lethal. Things that are being done, like we have law enforcement is now talking about the possibility of doing MAT in the jails. That would not have happened 2 years ago, and now we're really moving along in that direction. We now have MAT that's here. Like, that wasn't available 2 years ago. Now we now are bringing resources. We talk about the sustainability. These are the things I'm talking about that I think give me hope for the sustainability of a lower rate than the national averages of what we're seeing for opioid-related overdose deaths.
So let me interrupt. We're doing I feel like you're being a little bit too specific to the question that I asked, which is these multiple organizations that are out there, and it's a little frustrating that today is the first day that we as commissioners have any kind of a real understanding of what your organization is doing. We have frustrations with Northwest Colorado Health and what they're doing. We have frustrations with the mental health, the
Mindsprings,
and what they're doing, and it feels like there's a lot of scattershot stuff taking place out there. So again, if you were in charge, and you could wave a magic wand over this entire network of services, how would you do it?
Tim, so you need to realize 2017, January 1st, 2017 is when the health partnership became its own entity. We essentially had to do all of our new accounting practices, get all of our new policies. It's been a year and a half that I've been doing that. In that same process, I've purchased a building to kind of have a base here in Steamboat Springs for the agency. Initially, I was told not to bother the county commissioners because we had DHS.
I'm not criticizing it.
Just so you understand.
Well, I'm criticizing the entire system.
I just have to put the context there so you understand.
Sure.
You know, I think right now we're in a good spot where we're starting to have more time and we have a better sense of, like, our strategies. You know, what are the three bucket areas that we kind of really feel like we play in? And I think we can clearly come around to our community partners and articulate, like, what is it the health partnership does? It is a complex system, Tim. Doug, there is no questions about it. We couldn't make it more complex. People who are highly educated struggle navigating clinical services, community resource services, social driver services. Like, it is hard. You're right. We have Mindsprings Health, and they're doing their some different programs. You got Northwest Colorado Health, and then doing their program. You have DHS, or you have Lyft. You know, everybody's kind of doing their different programs. The health partnership, I think, attempts to try to bring a lot of those voices together around the same table where we're having those conversations. I think our navigation networks are an attempt to have a lot of those voices come around the table and make sure that we're not trying to duplicate services. But I don't think it's going to only be one agency. It is going to be the collaboration that comes from a public health agency. It's going to be the collaboration that comes from a big health system like a UC Health. It's going to come the collaboration that we have from like regional DHS. Everybody has a little different perspective to bring to the table and how we approach this. Unfortunately, when it comes to writing grants, it takes a lot of work to do collaborative grant writing, you guys. And even when you do the collaborative grant, and we're now partnering with our partners to subcontract, in the end, it isn't always what was promised to us in the beginning. And because oftentimes the federal governments or state governments, they have in their mind kind of what kind of price point they have for enrollment for services. Very different than what the reality is here in rural frontier type communities from a cost point. As a response to that, oftentimes we've had to make adjustments with numbers of clients that we might serve in order to kind of get somewhat close to what their price point is in order to the grant funds to get into our region. Unfortunately, that now is coming back, and it's causing hardship. I think some hurt feelings and some friction between some of our subcontractors and the work that we're doing in order to address them. So it takes... I think authentic leaders who can understand the value of collaboration. I think it takes county commissioners who sees the vision of, you know, having not only Route County be involved, but what are we doing in partner with Grand County, or what might we be doing in partner with Moffitt County? I think the Economic Development Council is a multi-county initiative, is it not? It isn't. Is it just Route?
It is just Ralph, but it's all the communities in Ralph County.
Is it?
Sounds to me, I mean, without putting words into your mouth, or maybe I am trying to put words into your mouth, you see the Health Partnership as this umbrella agency that can bring all these other people together?
No, we're not an umbrella. We're more of a...
convener?
Convener, but kind of a sticky substance that holds up, that kind of is asking people to come to the table and let's talk about how we best provide services to the communities that we're caring, whether that be in Rio Blanco, whether that be in Moffitt, whether that be here in Ralph or Grand or Jackson. We try to sit around the table when we have complex social issues and say, you know, this is not something that can be tackled all by one agency alone. It takes multiple agencies. A perfect example is our opioid use disorder issues. Like from work that we're doing at DHS to all the clinician partners, to our hospital partners, to the community agencies, to the treatment facilities. Like the work that we've done would not have happened if we just said, it's just going to be on, let's say, UC Health, and they're going to be responsible for this. That we would never have achieved the outcomes that we have.
Well, that's a for-profit organization. I mean, that's not going to happen.
Yeah.
Okay, but, great.
So you need an agency, I think, that can help be a facilitator, a convener, if you want to use the word convener, of somebody who's willing to go as a nonprofit after some grants and then be willing to share those resources with the boots on the ground doing the work. That often requires somebody to have a coordination type of role. It adds another layer of complexity to often things. People say, well, why don't I just fund this directly? Well, there's value in saying, hey, what are they doing over in Grand County that's working well? What are they doing in Moffitt County? What are they doing in Rock County? Like, what can we learn as a learning collaborative to address whatever issue, whether that be housing, whether that be transportation? And some of that work right now is being done at the level of the Accountable Health Plan. Rocky Mountain Health Plans is very interested, and these conversations are happening where across 22 counties, you know, people are sharing, like, oh, I'm doing this in Townsend, or this is what I'm doing in transportation in these counties. And we do try to bring that information back and share that regionally and locally with people. Now, you guys as county commissioners have been kind of on the periphery of a lot of that stuff. You know, Tim, you've come to some of our things. You know, Doug, you spoke out at a couple things. But, I mean, and how much do you want us to be in front of you? I don't know. I was told in the past not to bother county commissioners with the health partnership.
Okay, so you've done a good job today kind of bringing us up to date on what the health partnership is and what it does. Appreciate that very much. Now I think it would be a good time to let's go ahead and transition into the specifics around the MAT grant program and how that money is being used and how the services are being provided in the county.
So,
and just for your information, you know, Beth and myself and Dan and Tom, we went over and met with, what was her name? Mountain Medical?
Nancy.
So we had a 1-hour meeting with her, and I came away from that meeting with maybe a better understanding than what I had before the meeting, but I don't really feel like I have a full understanding.
So you guys, are you understanding that, so the Colorado Consortium is the state-based agency. It's got a direct report to the governor. The Colorado Consortium?
Never heard of it.
Never heard of this. Never heard of it. But I'm okay. Right. All which right. It's just a sign of what our frustration is with how all these systems work and interlock.
Yeah.
Help, educate us.
It's the Colorado Consortium. Rob Valick is the president of that. He's a pharmacist by training.
So is that a 501c3 or
I think it's actually a branch of state government.
So it'll be Office of Behavioral Health or Department of Human Services? Or
it's its own thing that reports directly to the governor.
Okay.
The way it's shown to me as a
kind of like the Office of Energy and the rest.
Or like
Governor's Energy Office. Yeah.
What about the senior? Don't they have a similar thing for seniors, like as an offshoot to the governor, some kind of senior? So this Colorado Consortium is a statewide initiative where they're literally, they're going after grant funds related to opioid use disorder and figuring out like how do they get it into other communities. Primarily based out of Denver, so there's a lot of people doing stuff out of Denver. But Rob Ballack and Jose Escobel, who kind of are the main drivers, have reached out to these other areas, outlining areas, to figure out, like, what are you guys doing in your community? Well, with the development of RX Task Force that was co-founded by Mara and I, we really got their attention because we wanted to do something with law enforcement.
When you have the numbers that you had on...
Yeah.
So let me... in February 2015, the Colorado Consortium for Prescription Drug Abuse Prevention, which is supported by and located at the University of Colorado Skaggs School of Pharmacy and Pharmaceutical Sciences at the CU Anschutz Medical Campus, launched a statewide public awareness campaign called Take Meds Seriously. So it's not exactly a state department.
That's not... out of the Color Consortium, there's all these work groups. I think there's roughly 10 or 12 work groups now at this point in time, where they're actually trying to get feedback from boots on the ground, people doing this work, to help inform them as to how they might go around raising awareness around opioid overdose prevention. So the Color Consortium reached out to us. We got talking. Jose Esquivel had, you know, I kept on saying, at least in our reach, like, one of the biggest barriers to us is that we did not have medicine-assisted therapy. At that same time, there was legislation passed so that physician assistants and nurse practitioners could get their Suboxone X waiver.
Yep.
So that all that happened, Jose put forth the bill. He wanted two counties in which he could be pre-reassured that if this legislation passed, that they would be able to implement some kind of program. Pueblo County, which has a really bad problem, and Ralph County, which we have a somewhat bad problem, but we had community boots on the ground. We were already mobilized. We were communicating with partners, clinicians. We made the pitch that we would have the ability to bring... We wanted MAT, and we had the ability to advocate for it. And so...
So who's we wanted MAT? So is that...
So the RX Task Force, which is a coalition of people representing different agencies
here in the county,
here,
local.
Here locally in Ralph County.
And one person's your staff person, right? Doesn't your staff person run it?
Mara's helping to run it right now, but at that point in time, and the health partnership pretty much.
So I've served the RX Task Force. Here
serves as kind of a, you know, there's funding that comes to the health partnership that we kind of use in order to do the initiatives that was outlined by our stakeholders that came together when we co-founded the RX Task Force. Because we did the Lunch and Learn series back in March 2016, I think. We convened a meeting and we put forth kind of this plan to address opioid use disorder. And getting MAT services to our region was one of the key things. And so we did that. So we made the pitch. We wanted to do this. Jose, you know, I went and spoke at the Senate committee hearing on this and advocated for it. And lo and behold, it got passed. I serve as, you know, so basically this is somewhat of what you're talking about, of how this kind of came to be. I guess history from the policy panel.
So this
is what I'm talking about. There's your raw ballot. That's kind of how this all works. And so just to put Jose Esquivel reported to the Attorney General. That's how Jose got involved. So I can't remember who's the previous Attorney General.
Cindy.
So Cindy appointed Jose.
Cindy Kaufman
authorized Jose Esquivel, which is her director of community engagement or something like that. So Jose was working with the Color Consortium. These are all the different work groups. You know, here you can see Jose Esquivel as one of the co-chairs there. Anyway, the idea was, let's put forth legislation and let's try to see if we can't help a couple communities improve access to medicine-assisted therapy, which is known to be a life-saving intervention for people with opioids.
So this isn't just the the reversal drug, this includes the replacement drugs.
Suboxone, yes, is for maintenance. Reversal is like you're saying, naloxone. This bill has nothing to do with naloxone.
That's a separate issue.
That's a separate.
Okay.
That's
this
separate.
Is just the actual treatment. It has nothing to do with reversal. Okay,
this is the medicines used in treatment of addiction
to
help people...
Get
not have opioid withdrawal symptoms and to get to live their life
So we're okay. We got about 14 minutes left. I have a meeting. I have to be in at 12 o'clock, so I just want to make sure we get through
this. So this is just from a policy level. It incentivizes nurse practitioners, PAs, to do the MAT waiver. That was the Senate bill. It was done in conjunction with the state alcohol, tobacco, firearm, I think, group there. It was to raise in two counties. It was supposed to help provide increased number of nurse practitioners, PAs, providing MAT. We were doing, and here you can see it. It's all there. Work on that.
So how much money came into Rout County?
It would have been roughly roughly 250, roughly half of that.
Oh, okay.
Give or take.
This basically split the money pretty evenly between Rout County and.
Yep.
And then Mountain Medical, they got a portion of that money. They didn't get it all.
I don't think so.
Ooh.
Now, so there was, so of those two, so Pueblo County, so.
I just care about Rout County right now.
Okay, well, so part of the bill was to create a state advisory committee around MAT. And they needed representation from the different counties. So again, I serve on that, so does Margie, nurse practitioner here in town. Psych nurse practitioner. Let's see, Bachman maybe. But so we have representation on this advisory committee. The advisory committee put out RFPs to the counties for people who would want to do this initiative, right? So Pueblo County had two existing treatment facilities, and essentially they just expanded capacity. Rout County, since we really didn't have anybody do it, we were looking for somebody to actually launch a new service line. Thus, Mountain Medical. Mountain Medical made sense because, hey, they've actually been doing services like this on the Front Range, Thornton area, and they had ties to this area, and they wanted to transition and provide services.
And this organization didn't have any objection to funding a for-profit organization to provide these services.
Alternatively to what was being offered by Mountain Medical when they applied, I know that Mind Springs Health also applied. I have no idea what that looked like.
Okay.
But
the choice.
The committee chose Mountain Medical. I recused myself from anything related to Rout County.
So was there there was a certain amount of funding that went directly to Mountain Medical?
Yes.
Was there some other funding that was reserved for other uses?
For the So the School of Nursing is the one administering the program. They provide technical assistance, and so they got a portion of the funding.
But in terms of the money on the ground in Rout County, it's Mountain Medical. There's not some other form of service.
So part of what Mountain Medical has been doing community education around MAT. They've been doing clinician education around MAT, and they have additional funds to help PAs like myself get trained in MAT. They also have funding to help people become certified addiction counselors. So part of their grant was to help people become certified addiction counselors.
So are people able to get a prescription then for the Suboxone?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
So we went from literally nobody getting prescriptions, and I think the data, let's go through this a little bit quicker. Okay, so here's, you saw the different types of programs from, adding some of these different products. Here's the startup. This is our program here, the startup program.
And both of those drugs are drugs that are used to help wean people off of opioid addiction.
Or for maintenance. There's a certain amount of people who believe that Suboxone can be a maintenance medicine. A certain amount of the population feels like you can use Suboxone for a period of time, but eventually you should come on. So there's nobody's clear on how to best deal with it, but...
So, again, we're probably running out of time. I want to make sure I get a couple of questions answered. So I guess I'd like to hear you address the controversy that I perceive that is out there, that medically aided treatment may not be the best way to go, or it certainly doesn't work as a standalone treatment without a robust counseling therapy element to go along with it.
So the standard of care for medicine-assisted therapy is never to be a standalone treatment. It is always in conjunction with a counseling aspect to it. And that's what Mountain Medical provides, is they provide counseling services along with our MAT services.
So you don't go get your prescription and then go back home and you're never to be seen again then?
Right. No, there's an ongoing therapeutic relationship that's going on.
Yep.
There's group sessions, there's individual sessions.
So one of the things that was disturbing when we met with Nancy, I asked her the question. I said, could you help me understand what your success rate is with this program? She goes, 95%. Whoa, really? We now have a therapy for people that are addicted to opioids that's a 95% success rate. Of course, Commissioner Melton was smart enough to ask, well, how do you define success? What does that mean?
Yeah.
And we didn't get a great answer. So personally, I'm dubious of a 95% success rate at any
time,
let alone curing opioid addiction.
So if you want to go there.
I do want to go there.
Nationally speaking, when you talk about treatment of addiction, it's 10%.
Thank you. That's your
success rate, 1 in 10.
Okay.
Just like if you're to try quitting smoking, it's 10%. Relapse rates for substance use disorder is 50%. Compared to diabetes, 70%. Compared to asthma, 80%. Like, people relapse. Like, they think they're better, they come off, and they have to come back on medicines. Like, similar opioid use disorder is something that people think they're good, and then all of a sudden, they're back in it again. When Nancy says she has 95% success, I have no idea how she's calculating that, other than to say she probably feels like if somebody comes to her and gets medicine and they come back in, and typically they'll be urine drug tested. And if that person doesn't have any illicit substances in their urine and they've been free of medicines, you know, free of substances for a month, that's a success.
Okay.
That's probably what she is declining.
Okay.
She says she has a 95%. She's probably telling you 5% of the people who are coming to me month to month, I can say on a month level, 95% of the people are not using substances.
Thank you for that clarification. That helps.
That's what I think she is telling
me. I think you're right.
And that's probably okay. Like, that probably is pretty accurate. Month to month, she can probably say she has roughly 5% of her population who is showing up positive for something and 95% who is not. But long term, year, 12 months, 24 months, I don't think
she knows. To any kind of a long-term success rate is with that long-term therapy and family counseling and all of that.
It's a bunch of wraparound services, none of which is no more important than stable, sober housing.
Right.
You know?
But so this money that's coming in from the MAT program is very specific.
It is specific.
To
get providers trained who are willing to provide Suboxone therapy.
Okay.
And to do community education, and to maybe get two more people who are certified as a source
of resources to provide that counseling.
Exactly.
Part of it. Okay. That's
exactly. Lots. So this is what they've seen success-wise. Let's just quickly. So this is our site 3. So we have one from
those. Where did we see this?
I sent this out to Beth.
I've seen this graph. Yeah.
Yeah. So this is just so you know. Like, this is. This is where we're at now.
And I think that was some of the frustration that we had on this end is that, wow, you guys are providing us rates of success in training people to provide treatment.
Yeah.
You know, we're greedy. We want to see the, you know, how's that translating into people actually doing better?
So here is site 3, and I'm not sure how this is reported out, but we had nobody for comparison, and we're up to around 60 people being given Suboxone and Vivitrol MAT at this point.
So we have a measurement of how many people were treated.
Right.
We just don't have really good measurements of long-term
outcomes. Nope. It's only been in existence for, you know,
that's
a short amount of time. Obviously, these are big, more urban, populous areas, and here's our rural area. But when you look at the population quotient, it's roughly like, I think 5% of the population when you look at the amount of people getting MAT.
And of course, part of this thing behind the MAT program is that it's you know, I mean, if we had all the money in the world, we would send people to long-term programs that last for 3 or 4 months inpatient.
Yeah.
But we don't have the resources to do that, so this is a stopgap at some levels.
So, you know, of the people who need treatment, only 1 in 10 get treatment, right? Like, that's the data. I'm now working out at the Foundry in their residential treatment facility 1 day a week. So I'm really interacting with individuals in active recovery. And we specifically don't have resources for people who are Medicaid or uninsured. Like, that is even harder yet. But even of the people who have insurance, it's not an easy thing. Because insurance companies, they kind of decide who they're going to allow in the gates of treatment and not.
Mm-hmm.
You know, right now we're sitting on a guy who's 24 days in treatment, and we still haven't heard from their insurance company, like, what they're willing to pay or not pay. In fact, they might choose not to pay anything at all, and we'll be left. The agency will be left. But anyway,
you're so 3 or 4 minutes left.
Okay. These are outreach activities, so quite a bit of work around corrections. I know. Let's talk about this. So, Nancy, so this isn't just a straight. Like, not everybody still believes in the efficacy of MAT. I mean, it saves lives without a doubt. And Nancy's point of view, I think, is people who have chronic pain, who have addiction disorders, can get relief from using Suboxone, and it's not going to kill them. And so I think Nancy's point of view is to use Suboxone not only for people in recovery over addiction, but she sometimes will say, well, it's an appropriate medicine to treat for people with chronic pain who have an addiction history who need some level of relief. And I think she's gotten a little bit of pushback from the medical community when she's done that. And so she hasn't been totally warmly received. I knew it from the beginning. I said, it's 50% of the community is going to be with you and 50% of the community is going to be against you. And Nancy's a pretty aggressive kind of go-getter, and she's kind of broke some of my stance the wrong way with some of her disclosures of how she viewed her relationship with the health partnership. She's not of the health partnership. She's not, I mean,
okay.
She is... She's a community person who we will do things with in collaboration,
yeah.
But she is not under the health partnership in
right.
any sense of measure.
She has a contract.
She's doing her own thing through
okay.
the contract with the Center of Nursing. All right.
And she has in the last minute or two.
What she has done successfully, which you guys should be aware of, is she has really partnered well with the jails. And Lieutenant Boyle over there, like, we really have improved that relationship. I think MAT is becoming more likely to happen in jails. She does a lot of detox of people prior to getting to jail. And Judge O'Hara, I think, is starting to help refer clients to her, specifically around that.
But you'd probably be the first one to say that counseling component is still lacking.
Oh, yes. Well, we need so much more. Like, Tim, there's... Yes.
Okay. That's great.
Counseling.
Okay.
100%.
You got 1 minute before I walk out the door.
They want to expand the program, right? So I hope you guys, as county commissioners, when they ask you guys, has this been beneficial to your county?
We really appreciate the conversation today.
I would
have enjoyed having this conversation last year when Ralph got picked out of the thing. We're going sitting there.
We don't even have
a clue to why we're there.
Well, they didn't reach out to me. I could have talked at great length about what was being done in Ralph.
And I appreciate your time today.
I do, too. You've given me a lot of really helpful information.
Yep.
I appreciate it.
I honestly, I don't think there's a clinician in this community who's done more than I have around trying to help move Ralph County towards addressing the opioid use disorder.
So this expansion of the program found its way through the legislature but that was for including some new counties. It's not new money for Ralph County.
No, it is. As some of those funds are to help sustain the programs in existence in these counties.
So the assumption is that Mountain Medical will get some continued funding.
And she has struggled because she has... Initially, when she came here, she said she didn't know if she could see Medicaid. I said, absolutely, Nancy. You cannot you cannot come here and not serve Medicaid.
Okay.
So after
you move on and Stephanie takes the reins over there at the health partnership, will Stephanie have some kind of an oversight role over Mountain Medical? Not really.
Nobody has any.
Nobody.
They're their own thing.
Other than the people at the University of Colorado that are in the nursing center program.
They're the ones who have some oversight over
there. Will the health partnership continue to communicate with the University of Colorado to get some of this data on how we're doing and what we're getting done?
I expect I'll continue to serve on the MET advisory board,
okay,
and I will have access to this information.
But as far as we're concerned, because we're going through our own little transformation here on public health, and this is really interesting what's going on here, who should we talk to in the future about information about what's happening with the MAT program in Route County?
Probably myself, because I will continue to be the contact.
Okay, I got to go. Right. Thank you very much. We really appreciate it.
Thank you very much for your time.
Yeah.
It was good.
Good luck.
I guess so.
Okay.
All right. Thanks. As staff had scheduled this item with the board in preparation for tomorrow's APCC meeting on 12-12 of 17, these items were presented to the board, and due to a lack of APCC meetings, there was never any type of presentation or where the board's conclusions were sent to APCC. So, acknowledging the turnover in a position here, Christy had created this Appendix A, which is set up more like a score sheet to reflect the direction that we came up in 2017 and basically see if it's still roughly accurate.
So I'm still trying to wrap my head around what the APCC does, even though I'm the representative, so I'll keep working on that.
Okay.
This resolution is part of that, and I know I'm going tomorrow, so maybe I'll learn something. But I also am a little confused because this doesn't look like direction to me. It looks like, I mean, a score sheet is not the same as direction in my mind. Like, knowing that Carrie said one thing and Tim said another thing and Doug said a different thing, like, doesn't tell me what the direction from the board was. So I feel a little confused, I guess, by all of this.
Well, what we hope to do is prioritize. I think that's the
prioritize big. What?
These action items. Because, like I said, originally there were, what, over 100, and we narrowed that down to 50. Those that have been duplicative or finished or not applicable to the county. And then prioritizing those is basically what's left. You know, what, you know, direction, what should we work on?
So I think then I still need some clarification on how that works and why we do it this way. Because when I look at the list of duties of the APCC, it's advising the city and county appointed and elected officials on a whole list of things. So, but what we're doing right now is advising the APCC.
Informing.
So that they can advise us.
Remember that, again, the APCC is not a policy committee. And
no, I understand that.
And they're only a process committee. And I think Tom said that a couple of times, and I think we're all still agreeing to all of that.
But yeah, so I think
again, I'm not sure either. So I'm
okay. Going back to the resolution.
I went through all of this stuff, and
the IGA is the critical part.
This is the IGA. Isn't it?
No, this is
the
resolution.
This is the IGA. That other page is the IGA, isn't
okay.
It? That says the duties.
But again, going back to the resolution, the APCC is an advisory committee and seeks consensus on recommendations to city and county elected and appointed officials on the implementation of the Steamboat Spring Area Community Plan, right?
But so if they're supposed to be advising us, then why are we reviewing this to go to them?
It's more
Do you
or
see
less
what
just
I mean?
Informative. I mean, again, with the goal of implementing the plan, it's just to, I guess a good way of putting it, is they make sure that it just doesn't collect dust on the shelf.
But they is also me.
Yeah.
That's why I'm a little confused.
I kind of agree with what Beth is saying, is that shouldn't the APCC take this list of action items, scrub it, and then bring it back to the Board of County Commissioners and City Council for.
So I understand what Chad's saying, though. Chad wants to make sure that the current board has still aligned with those directions that were given back on 12/17.
But if my, I guess I'm still, okay, I understand all of this now.
You're not being dense.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a moving
target. Or if I am, it's intentional. But if I sit on the APCC as the representative of this board, then why would the board give direction to staff to take to the APCC? I'm just still really confused about why this is all being done this way.
Well, and
it seems convoluted.
Yeah, and what I was expecting, and hopefully Christy would agree with this, is just that if we have this prioritized list, we can show APCC, hey, we are still pursuing implementation of this plan by focusing on...
Who's we?
The county.
I mean, because I'm on the APCC, mm-hmm. and so is Christy, correct?
She's a non-voting member.
Who developed the first list of 100 items?
So who's in our church with the APCC?
So who's advising who of what? And why are we doing this two-way advising? I'm confused by that.
Well, I would say that the prioritization list is yours. I mean, that's just, hey, the top things that we want to take care of, the top action items that we want to take care of. And when we have this list and it goes to APCC, it's just to show them, hey, these are the board's top priorities.
So
these are our top priorities. You're telling us these are our top priorities.
So that was the question. That was
whichever ones you come up with.
Yeah. So in your communication, okay. In your communication
so water cap.
Form for today's meeting, there was originally like 100 action items.
Yes.
And then staff has taken it upon themselves to scrub that down to about 50 items, getting rid of duplicative.
Those that have been accomplished already, those that are maybe just ongoing, you know, some that might not apply, some that are just city.
Okay, so you've scrubbed it down. Staff has scrubbed this list down to approximately 50 items that staff still believes.
No, they haven't either, because there's a lot of these in there. We told them then to take them off the list. And they're still on the list. And a lot of them in here that are complete, and they're still on the list.
And I understand, like, we have a new board, but I actually, even as the new member, don't really feel like it's appropriate to say, well, since there's a new member now, let's reevaluate this entire list. I mean, the direction from the board was the direction from the board, is my opinion.
But then again, I wouldn't want to put you in a spot where if you're adamantly opposed to
No, it's not about me. Something. We don't want it to change okay, well, every time there's a new board member. If it's supposed to be a long-term plan,
nice.
Am I...
Well, so, I don't know. I mean, I share some of your confusion. I'm not sure that I necessarily object to us having a conversation
yeah,
about
I'm
these
fine
things.
With having
and maybe if it's under the heading of... You know, what we struggle with here oftentimes where we have an advisory group or a planning commission or some other group that goes way out in some direction that we were never going to accept. It's not a bad idea to weigh in advance and put some bookends around what we want to be done.
I'm okay with talking through these items. I just am still confused when I look at the duties of the APCC, how us reviewing this list in preparation for tomorrow's meeting fits into what
then,
this says.
And then the other comment I would make is, you know, we're talking about updating our master plan. How much of our update of the master plan will render this list irrelevant? I don't know.
That's a question for a later day.
Yeah, once you've got the scope.
Okay, well, I'm still confused, but I guess I'm fine with us going through this list as intended and still trying to figure out what the heck the APCC does and what their relationship to the board is.
I mean, my read of the staff packet, I think the confusing part is that it doesn't quote these directions from the board. It's directions from one commissioner making a comment and another commissioner making a comment. So there was never a vote by the commissioners to accept all these changes part one. That may be because it was supposed to go back to that APCC, and they never...
Why would it go back? Why would it go back to APCC after we made our decisions? And whether we recorded it in the right manner, maybe it needed to have been codified or something like that,
that's
and then
exactly
voted
right.
on some type of
IGA,
end result.
Right, the IGA, I believe, is establishing the codification by the delivery of a report from the APCC, the report that they get from staff, and then APCC reports to a joint meeting of the city and county, and at that point, you would codify it, even though it doesn't say that you vote on it. It just says that it's delivered to you.
Okay. This process is, I will be so bold as to say it's a little bit not working. We're advising a group that's then advising us that we're then vote. I don't. It that
yourself
really
some flexibility
doesn't seem like it works.
Give yourself some flexibility on how you want to review this today. Give direction.
Yeah, I mean, I'm of the opinion that we can do whatever we want today, but that doesn't resolve my confusion about how the APCC fits in with what we're doing today.
Yeah, maybe that's an agenda item for the next joint meeting. Yeah, just to see if it's
not
serving its purpose.
Because it's just going to be the same discombobulated thing as it is right now at a joint meeting. Without having some... I think we ought to just come up with what we agree here as the county position, and we come up with something and vote on it. And
I agree with that.
Either
too.
That or we go through and hear thumbs up, thumbs down, and count the thumbs.
I'm fine with that. I would like to capture the direction as direction from the board, though, because the way that this is captured is hard to come back to and make any sense of it. Like, this person said this person said that. And if you don't have two that agree, then what does it mean?
So, again, going to the IGA, the duties of the APCC, last item G, the APCC shall continue to actively monitor, review, and coordinate proposed amendments and updates of the West of Steamboat Springs Area Plan, and shall inform and advise the city and county elected and appointed officials about the implementation of that plan. So,
yeah, but that's the West of Steamboat Plan and not the Steamboat Springs Community Area. The Steamboat Springs Area Community Plan are two different things.
No, it's the APCC.
APCC, not
yeah, but what he just read was regarding West of Steamboat's plan, not regarding the...
Well, that's what it says. The APCC,
A through F are
APCC shall review the priority list of action items in the updated SSACP on an annual basis and report at a joint city and county meeting on the progress of the implementation of the past priority items and seek direction for the following year. So,
but that's a joint meeting. I mean, that's not. I'm confused.
The APCC.
Yeah.
Their job is to simply determine whether or not these action items are being implemented, and report back to us. It is our job to tell them what the action items should be. Does that make sense?
Yes.
I don't know. It makes sense.
It's up to us to say, here are the action items, here are the priorities, now go forth and see whether or not it's being implemented, because you don't have any power to implement anything.
Well, I understand that the APCC
power
is
us.
Yeah, okay.
For practical purposes, the action items were adopted for the community plan, they were adopted by city council and the board of county commissioners, and then the planning commission, adopted it itself or accepted, because you guys were doing the adoption for these comprehensive plans.
No, we did it the same way the county does the plan. The planning commission, and we ratified their adoption.
But that's different for the Steamboat Springs plan.
It's different, yes.
They basically, through this last adoption, waived their authority.
So that did change.
Passed it off to you guys.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
Okay.
So really, I think the question you have, Beth, isn't maybe so much who goes first or who goes second or what the direction of it. Just what in the hell does the APCC exist for? What are they doing that we wouldn't just do ourselves?
I think that's a great point. I mean, because I don't know, Tom, it'd be interesting to get your comments, but I kind of doubt its relevance. And I've been to most every one of these since 1998. And like I said, sometimes the focus shifts to other than implementation, and then things get kind of reeled back in. But other than just kind of reporting to make sure it doesn't sit on a shelf and collect dust.
Yeah, because the APCC has no implementation authority or ability. We're the only ones that can implement it.
But it still says coordinate, inform.
Just like the Building Oversight Committee.
It says coordinate, inform,
but they're basically
monitoring
us.
Monitor. But it's not just monitor.
Not staff.
It says coordinate, inform, advise, and monitor implementation.
Implementation. But they...
So coordinating implementation would be coordination between the city and the county, right? I have to assume.
But the implementers are us.
We have the action items. So it's implementing the action items by staff and whatever process it takes in order to implement any individual action. Some of those might be able to happen by staff. Some of them might be completing something and coming back to you. Just like at one time, it was create a West Steamboat Springs area plan. So that's something that had to come back to you all. So there are some things that staff can do, some stuff that does have to come back to you all, and some of them that probably most city and county can do.
So I'm fine with talking through this list. I don't think we should do any kind of formal action on this list until we understand this IGA a little better. I mean, what the duties of the APCC are and how they relate to this board.
Well, it does.
They don't have ability. They don't have duties.
As we talk our way through this.
Right here.
I was on it for 4 years.
Okay.
We didn't do anything.
So, but as we were talking our way through this, it brings me full circle that we should, as commissioners, determine what action items we think are important and which ones should be dropped and how they should be prioritized. And after we've completed that process, we give it to APCC and say, monitor this and see how we're doing.
So, but the other side, the city's got to agree to that too.
That's right.
It's a jointly adopted thing.
Right.
So we need to come up with these positions and see whether...
And then see how they'll meld with the city.
Yeah.
So let's do it.
Okay, let's do it. We have 4 minutes. Number one, develop a land use tracking system. I think that's obvious because we're already doing it.
Yep. What is a land use tracking system?
Our software.
Okay.
Our new software.
So that's just in progress.
Yes.
Right? I mean, is there anything else that needs to be determined?
Ongoing.
Okay. I mean, it's clearly already been prioritized because it's actually happening.
What's the purpose of a land use tracking system?
It's just the hub of everything we do in the office.
To track the land use.
Okay.
Long-range planning, code enforcement, it's all...
Making it too complicated.
It's all our...
I don't know what a housing linkage program is.
Well, that's...
As a city... Oh, no, we had one. It wasn't a linkage program.
A linkage program would be what we require developers to provide X number of affordable units?
No. You'll fee in lieu then if you don't. So, yeah, we want to take that. That's
none of our... We don't do that. But we're not objecting.
So we still agree.
We don't object to the city doing it.
No, that's up to them.
Okay.
So the general direction, it sounds like, is this is not a county priority.
Yep.
Okay. Periodically review the urban growth boundary.
I think they should do that.
APCC
should do that.
You guys do it too.
So again, you know, here we're sitting here. I think all of this discussion, like I sent in my email, is irrelevant until we have the election done.
Fair enough.
So,
but periodically.
No, it needs to be done.
I don't know how periodically reviewing something can be an action item.
Well, we actually reviewed the criteria.
Twice a century.
We actually reviewed the criteria for a urban growth boundary adjustment and changed it.
Yep.
Because we found that it was virtually impossible to make an adjustment based on the criteria that was identified.
So maybe identifying what periodically actually means, but other than that, it sounds like it should just stay on the list, right? Yes?
Sure.
Doug?
Yeah.
OK. Okay. Appoint a growth management advisory group.
No, I don't need to do that. That's a joke.
I don't know what that is.
We had one around the time the plan was adopted, and then just kind of went away.
We have the anti-growthers here now. We don't need to have a committee.
There's not much point in having a growth management advisory group.
We can do whatever.
Yeah, these guys are here. They're on the payroll.
We won't keep them waiting. It'll only take a few minutes.
Yeah, let's just make one person wait rather than two people wait.
We will table your item while we do this real quick.
But hang out. Don't go away.
It'll only take a minute. Thanks, Chad. Hi, guys.
How are you? First, I have to apologize. I had the wrong information in my communication for the CDC today.
Great.
Updated. And I also included...
As long as it's not as confusing as APCC, I'm good.
For that. And I also included a copy of the airshed map so you can kind of see what we're working with and why we're doing this. Which one do you want to do first? Road closure?
Yeah, we have the road closure here first, so go ahead.
Okay. Good afternoon, commissioners. I'm here to... consideration and approval of temporary road closure of County Road 18 near Stagecoach Reservoir Dam to Pleasant Valley. This is in the Sarvis Creek Wilderness Area. This is a regular seasonal closure.
It's not in the wilderness.
It's not in
well,
the area.
Well, near.
Adjacent. Yes. Yeah.
Near. It's in the Sarvis Creek area. And it's approximately 2 miles of County Road 18 from that we close every year so that we can preserve the roadway. And not have to go in there and clean up after everybody who wants to drive their Jeeps through it and rut it all out.
Four-wheeling.
Is the road open to the dam?
To the dam, to the dock.
So it's closed from the dam.
From the dam down to the start of pavement in Pleasant Valley. And I've already I've coordinated with Craig Preston at the state park. And we can close the road up to a maximum of 90 days or until the road conditions improve out there. And Pete probably goes and checks it weekly.
Yeah, it's definitely asking.
And do I understand it's already closed? We're just approving that? Okay.
Correct.
You ready for a
I guess so.
Madam Chair, I would move to
approve. Resolution?
Resolution number.
Let me check. I think we might be on 16.
Resolution 2019-what?
16-016.
pursuant to CRS 42-4-106, authorizing the temporary road closure of approximately 2 miles of County Road 18 from the cattle guard below the dam to the gate at Pleasant Valley to all traffic.
Second.
Any other discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. All right. And IGA with CDOT.
Yes. So the second item that we have is a consideration to approve an authorization to accept an IGA between Rock County and the Colorado Department of Transportation for the application of magnesium chloride on gravel county roads within the Steamboat Springs airshed. County was awarded a congestion mitigation air quality CMAQ. Funding in 2010, we were going to do a project with the city when they extended their runway. They were going to change the realignment of County Road. Give me a little back history on our CMAQ funds.
Gotcha.
They were going to realign their runway, lengthen it, and that was going to realign County Road 44. We were going to take our CMAQ funds that we had at the time, which was roughly $400,000, and pave all of County Road 44 with it. City put that on the back burner. CDOT said spend the money, so we paved the motor pool portion of the Steamboat shop parking lot. That was back in 2015. After that project was finished, the city was using their and we kind of on a handshake agreement, we've kind of split the CMAQ funds with the city, and the city was buying street sweepers with it. Well, the city stopped buying and replacing street sweepers because the street sweepers they were buying couldn't satisfy the Buy America requirements. So we've had some funds, and then we went back to talk to CDOT back in 2016 about additional projects that we could do. I had come to the commissioners, I believe, in fall of 2017, early 2018, to talk about potentially paving other roads in the airshed. And the roads that are not paved in the airshed are not paved for a reason. We don't have traffic. You know, some of the roads may get closed in the process. You know, there's future plans of potentially expanding County Road 22, which is a little further down the pass than County Road 20, and then we would close that off, and then you could potentially pave that. But that is years, years, years in the future. So I talked with CDOT to see if they would pay for our annual magnesium chloride application within the airshed, and they agreed to that. So that's why we are here today. Based on running the numbers on the amount of magnesium chloride that we apply in the airshed, that comes out to be approximately $50,000. CDOT would grant fund that for 82.79%. We would only have to match, a local match would be 17.21% or $8,600. With some of these with some of this grant funds, we'll go and we'll mag the roads that already get mag within the airshed. But what we may do is start looking at different mag alternatives to help boost some of our more popular gravel roads in the area, namely being Buff Pass Road and the Hot Springs Road. Looking at different manufacturers, everybody's got their special gravel mix. You know, Ray and I went and toured one down in Grand Junction back in April, where Glayton Park was where we went, near Grand Junction. And Mason County Road and Bridge applied a product that we're taking a hard look at up there, and they had plowed.
So where's it at again?
Glayton Park is just outside of the National Monument.
Yeah, right before you get to the Glayton National Monument.
Yeah, and they've got a road that they plow in the winter, but it's kind of like our Buff Pass Road. Windy, a lot of switchbacks, steep, and
a lot of snow on it.
And so Rudy plowed it probably 2 weeks prior to us getting there, and they were still getting traffic up there, and there were washboards, but it wasn't like what we did.
It wasn't bad at all. The switchbacks weren't bad, and they really hadn't bladed it since October.
Right.
And so were they responsible for the road all the way through the park, too?
No. The National Park Service is...
Yeah, so it's only from basically the bridge up to the park entrance. Mm-hmm.
And so, but they did a different level, and then up on top over there, they did a different level of stuff with one of the products that we're taking a hard look at. And then there was one on the Fruta side that they did, where they just did a topical application, kind of like we did with mag chloride. And they did that back in the fall before the snow hit, and the thing was in great shape. So trying to find some experimental stuff. So
it'll be good to look at it now. Some frost coming out and seeing what's happening.
Yeah.
So I obviously this is a huge agreement, and I didn't read every single detail, but we feel confident that meeting everything they want us to do in order to get this money is doable.
Yes, essentially. Okay. Yeah. I mean, I don't have like the requirements in this grant like I have with my bridge grants, where I'm getting my COCs, where I'm getting my Buy America, where I'm making sure that I'm doing
so
all
the bottom line. This is stuff that we would be doing anyway.
Yeah, absolutely.
But we're just getting grant.
I just wanted to make sure it wasn't creating a bunch of administrative, like,
I mean, there's definitely some administrative work basis.
Yeah.
I mean, they have an expectation that we're going to do more than just offset our pre-existing costs.
Not necessarily.
So theoretically, this $41,000 would just reduce our mag chloride budget by $41,000 for 1 year. But
no, well, and I plan on year after year after year that I can do this, because that was one of the things, you know, that we could go, because Mark Rogers from CDOT was saying, we've got to spend this money, we've got to spend this money, we've got to spend this money. And so the, you know, 3 years of mag application is – $150,000 over the next 3 years, which is easy to do for us because it's something
so
already.
And the other thing, I guess, you know, not that we need to mag chloride something else, but we actually probably, if you have the other holes somewhere,
yeah,
and something comes up, we can use the 41,000 something.
But we'll right. be creating an expectation,
right? And that's what I'm
that's the plan.
Yeah. But I'm looking at alternatives to help better some of our existing
yeah,
roads.
To use this earth-bind product that's asphalt-based sort of dust control, dust suppression system to do what you say, the 3 miles on, Buff Pass Road is about $40,000. Now, whether we do the whole 3 miles there, do two Perfect. Miles there, and then we're also going to do the Hot Springs Road as well, 36.
So,
try this product, you know, because these are the hardest ones.
So, for a point of comparison, what do those 3 miles cost us just to do a traditional mag chloride application?
We spend, on average, per year for those roads. That's Leonard going up there and blading twice after winter.
Right.
Once, and that's sending the crew of 5 motor graders, water truck, mag, and then Leonard blading it twice before winter. That's going up Buff Pass and up. We spend on average $35,000 to $40,000 a year on those two, on that 5 miles of gravel.
But if you look at just the application, we're a little over $5,000 a mile.
Okay.
So typically, we would be between $16,000 to $18,000 apply mag chloride, where this is going to be about $40,000 to do. And
then, but Leonard's been on Buff Pass Road probably 4 or 5 times. Same with Hot Springs as well.
So we're doing the right thing here. We're taking this additional money. We're investing it into dust control above and beyond what we would normally spend on our own.
Well, we haven't decided to do that yet.
Right.
But that's the intent.
They're proposing.
Yeah. Yeah.
We're still going to have a supplemental budget to do it.
I think no.
Well, this is going to go through your budget, too. This mag chloride, we're going to pay for it. It's coming out of your expense. We're
right.
going to get the revenue for it.
And then I get the revenue from $41,000.
But we'll still have to do it.
So if you're spending more than what your original budget was, you can still
But it's not like we're just going to take that money and put it in the bank and say thank you very
right.
much.
No.
Okay.
No. I'm trying like the Dickens to improve those two roads. So,
okay. So we approve a concept of what your idea is.
To the extent possible, we'll stay within the budget, even with this.
Exactly.
Because this $40,000 that'll be coming back to us is money that...
Yeah.
That's not how accounting works. Is it?
Okay.
Right.
So we have to do a supplemental budget.
Yeah.
Okay.
So does the state... I mean, are they... I guess back to Tim's question, they're not expecting us to spend $40,000 more than we would have otherwise spent?
No. Not
and they have
in
no
my
problem
discussions
with
them? No.
Okay.
This
That's
is
unusual.
Just to, this is just to reduce... Yeah. Particulates in the airshed within the airshed.
And even if it's something we would have already been doing.
And that's what I said. I'm already doing this. And they said, yeah, we know.
Okay.
So I have a different question away from the discussion we're having right now. And again, I've seen this map before, but who was the brilliant scientist that came up with the airshed?
The Colorado Department of Health.
And
Doug's
what,
favorite department.
What prerogative did they come up to do that? Well, especially when we have prevailing west to east winds, and then with 44 and 40 and all of those roads coming right down, and the winds hitting up against the Continental Divide and settling. I mean,
I asked.
It seems like all of our whole county west of the steamboat area would be a prevailing wind, more likely than down south into Lake Catamount.
Right. I agree. I asked that question. And they said, you can take it up with the Department of Health.
Go
get it.
The PM 10 non-attainment area and how when the inversion forms, basically it's here towards Canada.
Because I wanted to extend to potentially gain funds because I could have spent a pile of funds paving 35 all the way through to 131 or up. Other portions of 41 continue 44 all the way from 129 back to 129 at Collins Corner.
That would have been really good there too
for sure.
All right, other questions on this?
Madam Chair, I move we approve and authorize your signature on an IGA between Rock County and the Colorado Department of Transportation for the application of magnesium chloride for the, on the Gravel County roads within the Steamboat Airshed.
Yeah.
And I guess also note for the record that it will probably require a supplemental budget at a later time.
Would you like to second?
Second.
Any other discussion?
Plus he doesn't have money.
All in favor?
Aye.
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 Actually, I'm excited that we have an opportunity to try out some of these alternative products.
My stepson lives off Clay Park Road, so.
Oh, okay. Yep. Well, and what, I don't know if you know Rudy Bevan. He's the supervisor for Mesa County, and he was saying that the by kind of eliminating mag and going to this, the roads are colder, so they stay frozen longer. And you have the magnesium chloride, which is what CDOT puts on the.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, when it starts to get warm, you get the snow melt off the pack out of your road from both ends, from the magnesium chloride that's already on the gravel road, as well as what you're getting from your air temperature. And doing away from that, that road will stay. Not having that magnesium chloride underneath will do away.
And it may not be as gooey when it rains.
So.
That'll be great.
So we'll see. Thanks, Commissioner.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You know, if that doesn't work out, County Road 6D would be a great. If you want to try it, a nice flat.
I know where that is.
Is it inside this map?
Close.
Yeah.
It's close enough.
It's close by about 20-30 miles. 30 miles or so.
Ish. It's in the same county. Okay.
So I don't think we really have time today to go through this item by item. Don't you think it might be better for us to individually, or I don't know, maybe we do, but we have a meeting
in
20 minutes.
What's that?
We have a meeting in 20 minutes.
Yeah, I have a 2 o'clock meeting as well.
Do you think we can really do this thing credit in the next 20 minutes?
Well, Doug didn't want to do it at all, so.
No, I didn't. I didn't see any changes that were, again, I didn't see any problems with what was done before.
I don't have any big problems with what was discussed before. More it's that I have specific questions about even understanding what all these things are. And I think Tim's right. That's going to take us more time than
I'm fine with
the
that
time
too,
we have today.
Really, I think some of these things ought to be off what we talked about here. They need to be off the county list. If they're going to be on the area plan list, they need to be. The area plan listed.
Hey, look, we just did NS 7.1B, investigate use of alternative paving materials to improve air quality. Done. So right. We investigated.
Complete.
So I think, Chad, we want to table this.
Okay.
And
I think you're still in some form better prepared for APCC tomorrow. And it sounds like we could just more or less go with that list from last time.
I think so. I mean, it's not like whatever we say today is going to totally change what happens tomorrow at APCC
right. Anyway.
So we can circle back to it afterwards.
Okay. You want us to all email you back in some collective email? No, yes, no, 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 yes. I'm just kidding.
Okay, good.
All right.
At some point in the future,
illegal meeting.
I don't even know what's on the agenda tomorrow, so we'll see. Because Christy indicated that the city had not, that Rebecca had not taken the list to the city yet, anyway.
Yeah.
So. Okay.
It should be a short meeting.
Okay. Well, maybe your conversation tomorrow, Beth, should be around why do we exist?
And what the hell are we doing?
If we decide we should exist, what are we really doing here? That'd be a good starting point.
It might sound a lot like what we discussed today. Looking forward to round two, Chad.
I'd like to.
So when is the area community plan? Since we're talking about the master plan as well, what's the timeline on the Steamboat Springs area community plan?
The update?
Yeah,
I think that's the other agenda.
Tomorrow.
Is it? Okay.
And
like
I,
what
it's
would we?
Just,
okay.
Yeah, I think it's just a presentation. So, because they haven't approached me for any type of timetable scope process.
Okay.
All right. Sounds good. You might as well come up here.
Yeah, come on over. Playing double duty today. Sounds how we roll.
Well, that way you can control what you put in the minutes from what you said. I should have that opportunity.
Just write my own minutes.
You kind of do. You do have the power.
Yep.
So we are here, and this is a request from, we received a letter from Yumpa Valley Land Trust requesting an amendment to a conservation easement, which is PDR Project 104. And this easement, it was purchased back in 2000. It's the Wilhelm property. And in order to resolve some of the boundary issues that currently exist, Yumpa Valley Land Trust and Mr. Wilhelm are proposing amending the existing 325-acre easement by adding the 35-acre parcel that he owns, that he purchased from his mom's estate, adding that to the conservation easement, but adding a 20-acre a building envelope around his residence. So we will gain about 15 acres of conserved land. And Linnea has reviewed the amendment, the deed and title, I believe. Mm-hmm. Linnea, you have
I didn't have... I had a couple of questions that I talked to Yampa Valley Land Trust about that they were able to address. So I had no concerns and prepared a letter for the chair to sign.
What's the motivation to add it to the condominium? They've got a house as it sits right now. Adding this 35 acres to the conservation easement doesn't create an additional building lot or an additional house.
Part of the house is on the conservation easement.
Exactly.
Because of boundary issues.
So, yeah, the way the legal description in the conservation easement was done, it actually is over on the house.
Oh,
yeah. So, I think it's a valid question, although I think it's simplicity. This was like the easiest way to fix it.
Yeah, they had Walter McGill do a survey, and it was costly for them to rearrange the boundaries and whatever, and they felt this was the easiest, cleanest way to do it.
And so there's no PDR funding
associated
with this 35 acres.
No, they're just giving us additional conserved land.
15 acres, okay.
Yeah. Because they're keeping that 20 acre to build additional. So the 20 acres will be outside the conservation easement. So they can build based on our rules, right?
So it's actually a part of the conservation easement, but it's an allowable building envelope. And the conservation easement restricts what can be in there.
Got it.
So
no other, it wouldn't be another residence.
Right.
Second, yeah. a little tiny
house? Yeah, I mean, it seems straightforward enough to me. I mean, we're getting 15 acres extra for free. And no extra houses being built cures a problem for them.
Right. So the resolution that's in here is dated 2015. Do we have a resolution that we're signing today?
It's not a resolution.
So I'm a little unclear on what that resolution is. Is that something we do later?
No, we should not do it.
Or did I make up that it's a resolution?
Yeah, it was an easement, and
it's not actually a resolution.
No, it should be just
Can you show me?
No, I'm sorry. Here, hold on. No, you're right. It's the amendment to deed of conservation easement, but it does say 2015.
Yeah,
they assume that is how long it's taken them to get through the process.
So the only thing we're signing is this.
Yes. So our agreement with any of the land trusts when we do a project, but in this case the Yampa Valley Land Trust, requires our approval if they make any amendments. So we're just saying, we approve. In this particular case, the state CPW also had the right to review the amendment. We've already approved that.
And we're approving that via this letter.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Okay. now I understand.
Yeah. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Madam Chair, I would move to approve and authorize your signature on the amendment to deed of conservation easement for the Wilhelm property, PDR project 104.
Okay. So that's not what we're signing.
Yeah, we're signing a letter.
Signing the letter acknowledging that.
So that was my mistake. I forgot the letter part in there.
Madam Chair, I would move to approve and authorize your signature on the letter dated May 17, 2019.
Approving the amendment.
To the deed of conservation easement for the Wilhelm property, PDR project 104.
Second.
Sorry, I forgot the letter.
It's all right. Any other discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. All right, that makes more sense.
Probably because I didn't get you the letter until after you'd submitted them.
All right. So,
don't worry, it'll all look in the minutes when she writes them up.
It'll look right. Yeah. So, that brings me to a question.
So you need
question.
This, right?
Yes. On that housekeeping thing,